Welcome back to the Vermont Conversation. In this half hour, we're going to look at the Fight for 15. That is the national movement to raise the minimum wage to $15. In 2012, a group of fast food workers in New York City walked off their jobs. And at that time, few people would have predicted that a little more than 3 years later, they would have changed our country's economic trajectory and begun to reverse decades of growing wage inequality. Here to talk about the movement for the $15 minimum wage, we're joined by Yannette Lathrop with the National Employment Law Project. Yannette, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you. I'm happy to join.
So can you just talk about, we now have in the last few weeks, New York State and California both passing laws that will raise their state's minimum wage to $15. These are two of the largest states in the country, so this is really enormously consequential. It'll affect millions of workers. How did this movement for the $15 minimum wage begin?
Well, as you already mentioned, the movement started in New York City back in November 2012. It was started by fast food workers going on a one-day strike. From then on, the movement has taken hold, and the first win for the movement was actually in SeaTac, Washington. And 1 year after the original strike in New York, SeaTac passed a ballot initiative that set a minimum wage of 15 for the tourist lodging and airport workers in the city. That was the first win, and after that, there have been many others in legislation or ballot proposals that were approved by voters in places like Seattle, in Los Angeles County, a number of places, and now the movement has really jumped to the state level with California and New York.
So you mentioned it began with a SeaTac, of course, is the, you'd call it suburb of Seattle, I guess, home to the international airport for Seattle. And it began there and then caught on in Seattle itself not long after. But a movement that begins with fast food workers in New York City, what do you say to explain for how this got traction? This is not a group, low-wage workers, that is thought to have political power.
Right, and that is a very interesting story, just in the sense that these are workers, as you mentioned, that are not typically, they don't have a lot of political power, but they're showing now that they do. Polls suggest that, but going back to your question, these workers staged protests, they staged strikes, they went into shareholder meetings to protest, to show exactly what it is that they have to go through and how little it is that they're getting paid. So it was a movement that has been definitely run by the workers themselves, obviously with support from unions like SEIU and from advocates like my organization, the National Employment Law Project. We have provided some support in terms of analysis, in terms of testimony for bills that are for 15 or so. There are a number of players in this fight, but the main actors are the workers themselves.
So it would be helpful to provide some context now. We're talking about states raising their state's minimum wage, but there is a federal minimum wage. Explain the difference.
Right. So the federal minimum wage is currently $7.25 an hour. And this applies obviously nationwide, but in places and in states or cities where there is a higher minimum wage that was legislated, the higher minimum wage, the local minimum wage applies. But in the rest of the country that does not have a higher minimum wage, in places, for example, like in much of the South, actually, in Alabama, that for example, that doesn't even have a state minimum wage period, that's where the federal minimum wage comes into play.
So $7.25 an hour. So, I mean, when we're talking about a $15 wage, we're talking about more than double the federal minimum wage I mean, that's pretty striking. Are there, outside of the South, are there many states that have just the federal minimum wage?
Not really, not very many. The South is really the epicenter, or the place where you're going to find either no wage increases or no minimum wage laws or ones that are very low.
Right. I'm actually looking at a map of the country with the current, and it shows there are quite a few states in the South with no minimum wage, so by default, the federal minimum wage applies, and that includes Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, and South Carolina. And then states with the federal minimum wage include Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Utah, Idaho, and then there's one state, Wyoming, with minimum wage lower than the federal. So again, it defaults up to the federal minimum wage. And we also have some northern states with the federal minimum wage, $7.25 an hour. That includes New Hampshire and Pennsylvania, so as well as Virginia and on south. So actually, you know, when you look at the map of the country, I don't know if it's half, but it looks like roughly half of the country has a $7.25 minimum wage.
It's about rough. Most states are moving towards having a higher minimum wage at this point. A handful of states that don't have a minimum wage period, and a few that haven't really raised it up very much at all.
Right. So when we're going back to the effort to have, when we're talking about California, people often say California is basically a country. If its economy was on its own, it'd be in the top 10 GDPs in the world. Now, initially, Governor Jerry Brown did not propose a $15 minimum wage. As I understand it, this came about because of a movement among labor unions to put it on the ballot. Can you explain what happened there?
Yes. So the ballot, there were two ballot proposals that were put forth in California, one that also included pay sick days. These were ballot proposals that were going to be in the November ballot. This actually was the incentive for Governor Brown to strike a deal and sign legislation for 15. Prior to that, it had been a proposal for, I believe it was 13 statewide. So the ballot initiatives in California are really what made the incentive and the possibility for California to jump to 15.
So talk a little bit about New York State, where Governor Cuomo not long ago was opposed to raising the state minimum wage, which I believe currently is now at $9. It's actually lower than Vermont's current minimum wage, which is moving on a scale. Right now it's at $9.60. So what changed Cuomo's mind?
That's another interesting story. Governor Cuomo had, as you mentioned, had opposed a $15 minimum wage initiative. There was a proposal in New York City to increase the city's minimum wage to 15, if it was possible. That, in addition to just the amount of advocacy in New York City, was what I believe pushed Governor Cuomo to consider 15.
We're talking with Yannette Lathrop. She's with the National Employment Law Project, and we're talking about the fight for 15, the national movement that has grown up around raising the minimum wage to $15, and it has just been passed as law in both New York State and California, as well as a number of cities around the country, including Seattle and San Francisco. Yannette, where do you see, and I should say to listeners, if anyone wants to join this conversation about the $15 minimum wage, our number is 244-1777 and toll free 877-291-8255. Yannette, where do you see this movement getting traction next?
Well, there are a number of states and cities where there are current campaigns for 15. Neighboring New Jersey, or within the region, New Jersey is one of the places where there is a campaign for 15. There's also Connecticut and Massachusetts, and possibly Maryland, although Maryland at this point is just a bill that was introduced. That's at the state level, and at the city level, there is the District of Columbia that could possibly, as a mayor here, could possibly also strike a deal for 15. There's a proposal in Minneapolis, and Minneapolis City Council has commissioned a study to look at the possibility of raising the city's minimum wage to 15 there. There's also possibilities that Montgomery County, Maryland, which is a suburb of Washington, D.C., could be looking at a $15 campaign in the next couple of years. In addition to those, there are a few other cities that we have a list of it on our website, raisetheminimumwage.com. There's also the federal minimum wage bill that was introduced by Senator Bernie Sanders in Congress and a companion bill in the House for 15, introduced by Representative Keith Ellison. And this bill would also eliminate the tipped wage. So those are possibilities. At the federal level, it's going to be a little more difficult to really make progress on 15, but it's great to know that there is that bill that was introduced, and hopefully that will be a starting point for negotiations for higher wages at the federal level.
Well, we have a caller on the line. Tom is calling from Barrie. Tom, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Yeah, just a quick... Doesn't the city of Burlington and its downtown business district have a higher wage? The only reason why I'm kind of remembering this, because I remember when the... I thought I remember hearing when the Skinny Pancake went into the airport, they had to get a waiver so that they wouldn't have to pay the downtown wage rate, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just something I thought I heard, but I didn't know if you guys knew about that.
I do not know the details of that, but perhaps if there's a caller who has the specifics of it. Yannette, do you know about Burlington, Vermont's minimum wage status?
I do not. I don't know that it does. There may be a living wage ordinance, which is maybe what the caller is thinking of, but as far as I know, there's no city minimum wage in Burlington.
Right, and I'm seeing here online that it does have a livable wage ordinance, and that says that the city jobs, a minimum level of compensation for city employees and employees of entities that enter into service contracts or receive financial assistance from the city of Burlington. So it may be that what the call is referring to is that the airport is a city-owned property. So, but I won't go any further out on a limb because that's the extent of my understanding of that. So back to the issue of, you mentioned a bill's been introduced to raise the federal minimum wage. Currently it's $7.25. When was the federal minimum wage last raised?
Well, the last step in the increase was 2009, so it has been quite a year since the federal minimum wage was increased.
What do you think has been the most persuasive element of low-wage workers demanding this change? Has it just been, politicians not wanting to be seen as being unresponsive to them, although that really hasn't been a problem on many campaigns in the past, or how do you account for it?
Well, as part of the activity, the mobilization around 15, fast food workers and other workers, I should mention that it's not just about fast food, it's not just driven by fast food workers, although it started that way, but any number of workers from any other industry has joined the fight for 15. So these workers have, as part of their mobilization, they have been highlighting the difficulties of making ends meet, especially if you're raising a family on the federal minimum wage or the minimum wage that is applicable and that may be higher than the federal in localities and states. This is part of what has helped change the minds and the hearts of elected officials that can actually increase the minimum wage, and also what has encouraged certain employers to raise the their own minimum pay voluntarily, whether to 15 or to a lower amount. So it really has been the worker story, the worker-driven mobilization that has really put a human face to an otherwise policy-driven conversation.
How do you respond to small businesses who say that this kind of a wage increase will be difficult or impossible to bear?
Well, you know, this is interesting. It doesn't seem to be the business owners themselves who tend to make these arguments, but industry represented organizations such as the National Restaurant Association, certain Chamber of Commerce groups, for example, they are the ones who make this claim. But polling supports the idea that even businesses understand the benefits of a higher minimum wage, a wage that allows these workers not only to make ends meet, but to also to make customers out of them. If their workers, business workers have enough money to go and pay the bills and maybe a little bit left over to indulge once in a while, that creates that creates jobs, that creates more sales for businesses, and you know a lot of small businesses do see their employees as parts of their in a way extended families, and they have to face these workers and their inability to pay their bills if they don't compensate them accordingly. So this is the type of argument that is mostly espoused by organizations speaking on behalf of large businesses and their representatives.
We're speaking with Yanette Lathrop. She's with the National Employment Law Project, and we're talking about the fight for the $15 minimum wage being waged around the country. If you want to join in, your thoughts about raising the minimum wage, you can call us at 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Yanette, can you speak to what some of the research has found about the impact of raising the minimum wage?
Sure. In general, the research shows that that there are benefits for workers, obviously, from raising the minimum wage. Specifically in New York and California, for example, the raises will benefit about 9 million workers in total, about 3 million in New York and a little bit more than 5 in California. And this is obviously going to be a significant portion of the total U.S. workforce that will be impacted by this. The additional income for these workers, according to analysis, is roughly $4,000 per year, per each year of the increase. The vast majority of the workers that are going to benefit are adults, about 96% in California, 95%, or 96% in California, and 95% in New York. A significant number of these workers are also parents. For example, in California, it's about 37% of workers who will benefit are parents. And in New York, it's 33%. There are a majority of workers who will be affected are workers of color in the 75% range in California and 51% in New York. Majority are full-time workers. There are several benefits, really, for the workers themselves. As far as for the economy as a whole, the research that has been done does not show that this would have a negative impact on the number of jobs. And in fact, in California, the University of California at Berkeley conducted a study that showed a potentially small increase in jobs after the minimum wage was phased in over there.
Right. And now that we have the minimum wage being implemented in big cities like Seattle and L.A., although the implementation is incremental over a period of years. And we should make that point that none of these places is throwing the switch and going from $7 or $9 to $15. These are all staggered over approximately 5, 6, 7 years in California and New York. I'm just looking at some of the data around what it means to make the minimum wage, the federal minimum wage. So a full-time year-round worker paid the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour would earn just $15,000 a year, which falls under the poverty line for a family of two and is far below the the minimum wage's inflation-adjusted peak of about $20,000. It's really a situation where you're working minimum wage, you're in a hole that just keeps getting deeper.
Yeah, exactly. That number is just, I think it speaks to just how difficult it is for these workers to make ends meet. And even single adults, have a hard time making ends meet on $7.25 an hour. For New York, my organization did an analysis showing that cost of living in basically every part of New York State, even in the lowest cost regions of the state, single adults really needed more than 15 to make ends meet.
And this is. Are there workers who make less than the minimum wage? And explain who.
Yes, unfortunately there are. There are tipped workers whose base wage at the federal level is only $2.13 an hour. In certain places, like in California, there's no tipped wage, so the tipped workers earn the same as any other worker.
And we're talking about, waiters and waitresses for the most part, right?
Well, yes, that's one of the largest occupations, but there are other workers that are also earning tips outside of restaurants. But these workers in California, they actually earn the full minimum wage. So that's great news for all workers in California, really. And in New York, though, there is a tipped wage. Right now, the wage board that had made a recommendation back in 2014, at the end of 2014-2015, raised the tipped wage to about roughly 83% of the full tipped wage. Now, the deal that was struck by Governor Cuomo lowers that percentage a little bit. The actual monetary amount doesn't really change. So it's not like workers will be paid less than they are being paid now, these tipped workers. But the percentage is now roughly 67% of the full minimum wage. So these are... As I mentioned, at the federal level, the base wage for tipped workers is very small, $2.13 an hour. In other places like New York, it's a little bit more. But in a number of states, as I mentioned, in California, it's a full minimum wage. So it's a little mixed on that. So tipped workers are one part of the workforce that gets paid less than the full minimum wage. There are others also, some workers with disabilities can be paid less than the minimum wage, unfortunately.
Workers with disabilities can be paid less than the minimum wage? How does that work? I thought that was illegal to discriminate based on disability.
It's not based on disabilities, but it's based on certain workplaces. Like I believe in workplaces such as, these are exemptions, by the way. In places, for example, in workplaces like I believe is Goodwill, they can be paid as few as just a few cents per hour.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. Yanette Lathrop is a research and policy analyst for the National Employment Law Project. That's at NELP.org. Yanette, thanks so much for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
That does it for this week's Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman, and you can hear this and all Vermont Conversations at vermontconversation.com. And we'll be back next Wednesday at 1 for another Vermont Conversation.
This previous hour has been presented by Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility. The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, featuring interviews with leading change makers from around Vermont and around the world. It's underwritten by The Alchemist, serving the greater Waterbury community and Vermont since 2003. By UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. By Vermont National Life Group, which lives its values every day. Do good, be good, make good. By Coffee World, your local digital print shop, offering quick design and printing services for projects of all sizes. By Green Mountain Power, partnering with customers on energy innovations while delivering clean, reliable, and cost-effective power, as well as over 750 VBSR businesses.
World of National News Update coming our way at 2 o'clock. The Getaway, 2 hours of music standing by this afternoon. On locally owned and operated 96.1 WDEV FM in Warren, FM 96.5 in Barrie, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier. We're serving the kingdom at FM 101.9 from Island Pond. 2 o'clock, time for World and National News Update.
I'm Tim McGuire, Republican.